Secrets from a Coach. Thrive and maximise your potential in the evolving workplace. Your weekly podcast with Debbie Green of Wishfish and Laura Thompson-Staveley of Phenomenal Training. Debs.
Law, you all right?
Yeah. How are you? What's been going on? What are your witchy fingers picking up as we head towards Halloween? We know that this month is all about the fears, the things that can hold us back and haunt us. What are you picking up in the world of work that might be some current hot topics that are worth chewing over?
Oh, yeah. So what's coming out at the moment is people saying they're going to do something and then not doing it for whatever reason. So a little bit of self-sabotage going on there. But also this, can we get through to the end of the year? So we're already thinking about how do we get through to the end of the year and what do we need to do to plan it and can I do it and am I good enough to be able to get there? So yeah, bits like that where our mind is sort of playing tricks on us, if you like, a little bit.
Yeah, nice link. I've been doing lots and lots of team stuff and the real kind of sexy skill areas at the moment seem to be about decision making, handling analysis paralysis. People are working on some pretty hefty projects at the moment with lots at stake. And how do you then not kind of stitch yourself up basically and kind of not look after yourself? And we all know we need to go to bed early and exercise, but the practical reality of it is it could be so easy to kind of hold yourself back almost by having all these naughty habits that we kind of, you know, that rear out. Typically, when we start to get stressed, you know, yes, we can then start to exhibit some kind of habits and behaviours that might not bring out the best version of ourselves. You mentioned the word sabotage. So, you know, and the internet is awash with things about, you know, self-sabotage. And what is it and why might thinking about self-sabotage be a useful topic right here, right now, in this extraordinary environment of the workplace we find ourselves in? So what is self-sabotage?
Yeah, so the most simplest definition that I love is this bit that says self-sabotage is when you undermine your own goals and values. So in other words, you sort of acknowledge that there's something out there that you genuinely want in your life and then you believe is good for you. And yet you then do things that are in direct conflict with it so that you sort of fail at that goal. And it's that bit that's, you know, I think recognizing that self-sabotage behaviors, if you like, are both conscious and unconscious.
Do you know, the amount of people who I think are currently looking for new jobs right now, you know, I mean, maybe we just attract those conversations because people know the stuff that we do. But is this an example of self-sabotage? Someone has made the decision, right, that's it. I'm going to look for new work. I'm going to sort out my CV. It's the new me. That's it. Now, that's the Wednesday version of you. Cut to Friday of, right, I was going to get my CV done this week. Oh, I haven't done it yet. Oh, right, you know. And actually, they find themselves signing up for more projects to give them more stress in their current role, which means they have even less headspace to look for new work and do their CV. Is that an opportunity? Is that an example of self-sabotage where every part of me is saying, I want to change my role, but actually I've made myself so busy that I can't do anything to enable me to do that?
Yeah, absolutely. Because self-sabotage actually lives in our fears, Law, and it's that bit where we should do that or we should do this, but we're no good at this because. So just like you said, you know, working with people around, I want to get out, but I won't because. And it's that, oh, I'll just do that later. And as you said, they're all raving to go on a Wednesday and it's, I've got the plan in my head. And then, oh, no, maybe I won't. And then it's the fear that comes out of that, that then stops them maybe from putting that job advert in, making sure they put their application in or whatever it is they're going to be doing or exploring a conversation with somebody that might be able to support them. And I was just working with somebody about 2 or 3 weeks ago now that was procrastinating, because one of the signs, if you like, that you can see that you're actually self-sabotaging is you put stuff off, you procrastinate over things. And they would go, I'm not sure if I could do that job because I'm not good enough, and all of that inner critic stuff that comes into our mind. And I just said, well, what's stopping you? You know, why would you not go for that job? You know, you're not having to sign on the dotted line until you get through the door and you've jumped through how many hoops to do it. And they just pondered on it. They just took that away and said, okay, I'll think about it, which is one of the things you can do. At least think about it first before saying no. And I got a message today saying they've actually gone and applied for that job because they had chance to think about it.
Yeah. And with procrastination, some things that I've seen that have kind of worked for people and, you know, they've enjoyed it when we've covered it on sessions is, if you are someone that for whatever reason are prone to procrastinate, or it's just what you're doing at the moment, you know, I mean, when you've got to do something like a VAT return or, you know, a proposal, I've never had such a tidy desk. You know, it's at that point my brain goes, why don't you tidy your desk?
Yes,
or why
exactly.
Are you going to make a cheese sandwich just before you're about to do some real detailed work? And it's amazing how this little kind of voice inside is kind of saying, come with me and play, even though you think, no, because I've got to get this done. And one of the things that I think can help with procrastination is you set the wheels in motion where there is a process in place that is bigger than your mood in that moment. What do I mean by that? If you know you want to start an exercise regime, you book in those appointments so it's just there in your diary. It's more effort to not turn up than it is to book it. If you are thinking, right, that's it, I'm going to leave my job, or I'm going to apply for another internal role, or I'm going to have a chat with my manager about my future, tell someone, a buddy, who can then hold you to account. Did you have that chat on the Friday that you said you were going to? And then it means it's not just sitting there inside your own head that you can procrastinate. You've got this kind of third-party authority figure, isn't it? It's either a diary commitment, yes, or a friend that's going to say, did you do that? Or a coach, you know, whatever. But it's having that external authority, I think, helps to put in a chain of events that's bigger than your individual level of focus in that moment if you've woken up feeling a bit naughty.
There's no reason, I say, apart from the fact that we think we can't, or as I say, it just lives in our fears, and it could be as a result of some past experience that's happened, or, you know, something that's got in the way, or, you know, how our experiences are keeping us down. And we sort of hold those in our unconscious minds sometimes, and yet we don't realise why we might be procrastinating over doing something, or thinking that we're not, or we're chronically worrying about everything that we're doing. You know, because that's another thing where we can feel sort of helpless towards it. So it's that bit that says, you know, what do we do? You know, we need to think about how do we recognize it, first of all, I think, and also think about what we can do differently. And as you said, having maybe an accountability buddy that you're checking in with, which is, I suppose, to some extent, initially, you know, when people come to, you know, have some coaching, if you're like, I'm seeing them maybe once a week, twice a week, whatever they might want. But, you know, they come back and let me know how they've got on. So, and that's really interesting for me. If they don't do something, that's a whole nother conversation in itself, to understand what sits behind that, what stopped them from doing that. And that's really powerful.
So again, in the spirit of complete confidentiality, what are some of the things you're seeing in this, you know, extraordinary times that we're living in? What are some of the things that are holding people back and sabotaging that good intent? What are some of the key things? So you've mentioned, you know, procrastination, but I guess that's a behaviour. What's the sort of the driver that sits behind someone then thinking, right, today's the day I'm going to do my CV, and then they just sit around tidying the kitchen? You know, what actually is the emotion that lies behind that?
Because it's that underlying fear that maybe I'm not good enough, or I don't value myself enough to think that I'm worth it. So that bit, a bit like that, can I do this job? Are they going to catch me out? So a little bit linked in with what we were talking about before, Laura, about that imposter syndrome, you know, when someone's actually in the job, they can't believe they've got it. But there's a bit that people, if you like, untalk themselves out of it, because they're not valuing what they do bring, and the confidence that they have within them is just being squished a bit because of something that may have happened in the past, or as we said, you know, they just don't think that they can, which is madness, right?
Do you know, the other thing I think is a challenge of our time with reference to procrastination is that it is very easy to be distracted and to procrastinate. I was showing this beautiful infographic that I found about the amount of data that is going around. There's 2020. I mean, goodness knows what is in 2021, but the stats in 2020, every minute there are 28 tracks put on Spotify. Every minute there are 4.5 million WhatsApp messages pinging around the world. Every day there are 306 billion emails. it is a phenomenal amount of external noise that we have. So permission to sort of forgive yourself slightly if you're finding it ever so easy to find yourself busy but not actually doing anything. And I wonder whether one of the calls to action we have as sort of working adults right now, whether you're in work with people that, you know, live with people that are in work, is the ability to shut out the world for a moment, to be able to focus on those core goals, because there will always be someone sending you some notification demanding your attention. And I think it's ever so easy to procrastinate and sabotage your goals if there's too much of you spread out, you know, kind of digitally almost, because it's only going to get noisier. So that discipline of mind to be able to think, I know I've got a busting inbox at the moment, but actually it's really important for me to focus on this right now, turn everything off, and then, you know, extract yourself from your normal place of work. And even that change of scenery can help then focus on your values, you know, and the goals that you want to achieve.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that bit about recognizing it's there in the first place, I think that's something, you know, making sure, I suppose, understanding really what is that self-sabotage, you know, if you like, filling, what's the gap it's filling for you as well? Is that something to consider as well? Because people sometimes say, oh, I'm just going to get tougher on myself. Why would you say that? You know, it's how do you bring compassion to yourself as well? How do you ensure that you are being kind and you care and you're showing some love to yourself? And that's where we talk about, rather than listen to that inner critic, which is negative and puts you down, makes you feel stupid and small, is actually how do you flip that thinking? The minute you recognize that's what you're doing, is how do you turn that into dialing up, if you like, what I always like to call your inner coach? So you're bringing the compassion to whatever it is you're telling yourself and starting, I think, to identify what is this all about? Why am I, if you like, having this need to choose to not be successful or not feel I'm good enough? Because if we can understand what that is, we need to think about, you know, what we can do differently. So knowing what you're good at, taking that moment and really exploring that, I think that's a really good thing to consider. But I think the other thing we can do is thinking about what would be an alternative, healthy approach. So again, you know, don't just listen to the inner critic. Have a look, you know, and look on the other side with what the inner coach would be saying. So, you know, thinking about it from both sides, if you like, and that bit around stepping in and then maybe anticipating a little bit more and planning for those obstacles that you know you're going to put in your way, because you might want to lose 20 pounds and you might have done it, but then you know that there's, you know, biscuits lurking in the cupboard that are calling your name at moments when you may be a bit stressed or pressure or not sleeping well, as you said. And, you know, so there's all this other stuff that can play into that for us.
You know, I just think it's such a fascinating area, isn't it? Because it's something that I have to mindfully think about all the time. And I think that most of us have to think about it mindfully all the time. You know, I booze, I'm okay with around the house. I don't really know what alcohol we've got in, but I know to the digit how many slices of cake or biscuits or packet of crisps exist in my house at any one time. I've got no idea what's in my bank account. I've got no idea how much I've got in any kind of savings account that I might have on a whim a couple of years ago thought I must start saving. But I know exactly how many slices of frozen Victoria sponge cake are in the freezer. And it's phenomenal how our brain will hold on to this data. And what does that then mean? That means if I'm sitting there feeling a little bit bored, listless, I might think, oh, there's some cake in the freezer.
Yeah.
It's phenomenal how your brain will bubble up this data and this insight. And then in that moment, you've got a choice, haven't it? Do I focus on that, or do I focus on something else, which is, that's interesting, my brain is thinking about Victoria Sponge whilst I'm trying to do a VAT return. I wonder if it's because I'm looking for excuses.
Exactly.
To kind of get away from it. And I wish someone had told me when I was younger, Deb, so here we go, during the war, that actually a natural positive state inside your head does not automatically happen 24/7. It takes work to remain positive. Of course, it's easier in the moment to sit there and think about all the things that are wrong with your life. It takes work to train yourself to acknowledge the sad things, but to focus on the positive things. And I wish someone had sort of told me that earlier on, because I think it could be easy to make the assumption of, oh, well, I'm just a negative person, or other people just have a different mindset and a different outlook to me. That's the way they were born. But it really is our own computer in our head, and we decide how to program it, isn't it? And
absolutely.
I just think I could have been helped in my earlier years in my career had I realised that having to purposely think about your mindset is not failure. Yeah. that is what definitely people not with a good mindset do.
Yeah. And, you know, like, you know, we're born with, you know, with not knowing how to self-sabotage. You know, we're born as junior babies without that. And it's only when we layer stuff up that we, you know, we sort of probably add to the pile around that. And I think it's, that's the bit for me where if you can sort of, you know, if you like the version of, you know, self-sabotage versus compassionate existence, it's that bit, your inner coach actually is working with you to overcome the inner critic so that you can absolutely start to be curious and create that understanding. Just like you were saying, oh, I wonder if I'm connecting that bag of crisps, I know exactly that Victoria sandwich, oh, and I'm doing something I don't like to do. You know, it's that bit that says, what is that about? So what will that fulfill? And it's actually, how do we maybe change some of our thoughts around it? And if you're, we always talk about coming from your heart center. So if you were to listen to what your heart was saying, what would it be telling you? If you were to complete your VAT return, what gift is that giving you back?
Well, I've got to dig deep for that one, I have to say. Yeah,
you have to dig deep. Go right in, Law.
In that moment, I think the Victoria sponge has got a compelling argument, I have to say. But of course, we could have been talking about this years ago. The unique thing about this set of circumstances we're in is millions of people are working remotely. Now, what does that mean? That means my behaviours day to day are less watched than they used to be. I wouldn't dream of getting up and microwave defrosting a slice of frozen cake from the company freezer. I mean, you just wouldn't. You just wouldn't do it, you know. Whereas when we're all working remotely and unwatched, I think this is something that's worth a bit of a watch out, whether it's your health outcomes, whether it's your general sense of energy. How we behave when we're not watched is quite different from how we behave when we're watched. And if you are now finding yourself hybrid working, just challenging ourselves, are your day-to-day habits self-sabotaging those goals that you might say to yourself on the commute in on the days you go in? Right, that's it, I'm going to have a really healthy week. And then actually all of that time on your own working, if you're feeling a bit bored or a bit disconnected. So I do think this is one of the topics of our times for professional workers who are now hybrid, in that we're left a lot to our own devices. And are those devices that are potentially going to sabotage, you know, that kind of internal positive image we have about ourselves? And we might just need to think even more mindfully than ever before about how we watch out for how we either feed the demon or feed the angel, and because we act differently when we're not watched. I mean, research shows people eat less in a restaurant than they do in a takeaway. If you're eating on your own on a sofa, you'll consume far much more food than you would sitting in a restaurant witnessed by other humans. So I just think that's fascinating about what does that mean for remote working.
Yeah, I think you're right. And also that bit of commitment back to yourself, as we said, I think, you know, if we can sort of dial up, if you like, the compassion and the love and the kindness, I think, for ourselves, you know, not being a rollover, I'm not saying about that, you know, or, you know, but being strong in our commitments to looking out for ourselves and, you know, not, if you like, shooing away those feelings and saying they don't exist. It's in just embracing them. I think it's about working through them. So if you can name them and you can, you actually put a name against that feeling or emotion that you're experiencing in that moment, it gives you an opportunity gives us an opportunity to work through that. What is this trying to tell me here? And I think that's the bit where if we dial up our inner coach and be curious, create understanding, you know, navigate a different way through that, create some actions that are good for you. I was talking to somebody earlier actually about this because they don't turn their phones off at night, everything else. And they said, actually, I'm going to do this for the next month. I'm going to turn my phone off at 9 o'clock every night for the next month. And I challenged them in that moment and said, realistically and practically, are you going to achieve that? Your intent is good, but realistically, will you make it happen? So again, that person said, well, no. So we're already setting ourselves up to sabotage our good intent. And I think that's the bit we need to challenge ourselves on, to go, how practical is that to do that for the next month, every single day at 9 o'clock, close it off? So we said, you know, one of the things we agreed when we were exploring it was to say, what about if you just did it one day a week to start with, and then acknowledge that you've achieved that? How did that make you feel? What difference has it made to you? And then do it two nights. So building it up, creating a new habit.
Love it. That's reminded me of a bit of kit that we take teams through about negotiating those boundaries, isn't it? About having your gold standard, which is, right, 100% of the time, phone off. But where I guess that links to self-sabotage is if you know in your heart of hearts, there's no way I can commit to that, but I'll say it now because it makes me feel good, then actually already you're setting yourself up to fail, aren't you? You're stitching yourself up. So having a silver and a bronze, or whether it's the bronze to build up to the silver, you know, which is the other way around, then I just think that's a really practical, realistic way of enacting change in your life, but empowering yourself in light of the reality that we're all kind of in. I'm just musing in my mind, Debs, because I just think when you apply a bit of evolutionary science to behaviour, it's amazing what can then come up. What evolutionary benefit or reason is there that we have these self-sabotaging thoughts? So I'm thinking, you know, us humans have been built to be perfect machines in terms of being able to adapt and deal with our world around us. It might not be great for the planet, but we're certainly ever so good at living, aren't we, and dominating our environment. So I wonder what reason actually it has that out of those 72,000 thoughts or whatever it is we have every day, sometimes the majority might be negative as opposed to positive. And I'm just musing, where does that come from? So why is it that us humans have this negative train of thought? Because I don't see any other animals dealing with, you know, negative emotions that are sabotaging them in their tracks. So yeah. I'm wondering whether it originates from the fact that we are sociable creatures and we want to be able to collaborate and work well with others because it's a secret to our success. But whether they, the kind of the shade to that, the kind of the less positive side to it is we might over-worry about how we fit in and over-worry about how we have the value that we add in that moment, which can then actually perversely hold us back from being able to kind of do what we want to do. So I'm just wondering, because for every kind of thing that us humans do, there tends to be some kind of deep-seated reason based in our ancestry about what led us to get there, you know, fight and flight that saved us from the saber-toothed tigers. But why the negative mindset? Maybe it's then to be able to predict some of those risks that might be out there.
And I think that's so important. And oh my God, this could be this, you know, life history lesson. We could go on with different theories around it. But some of that is that when we compare ourselves, so, you know, the comparisonitis, as I call it, where I'm comparing myself to that person because they've got a bigger car, or that person's got, you know, better shoes than me, or that person's got more than I have. So, you know, we're sort of being brought up into always, you know, strive to be better than the next person. And I think over time, that's become that all-encompassing. I'm not happy unless I've got a big house. You know, I'm not happy if I've got, you know, the best car that I can get, or change my car every year for the new reg. Whoa, and that's the bit where I go, take a step back. What does it mean for you? You know, what is it that's driving you to want to always be one-upmanship or whatever it might be? And I think, you know, until you stop people and get them to think about it, they may not have thought about it, because it's that unconscious behavior that's driving them forward. And it could be messaging that they've picked up in their experiences, in their past. It could be somebody said something to them 20 odd years ago that still resonates, and therefore they want to prove that they're better, they're stronger, you know, they can please everybody because then they'd be liked. I mean, it's just a minefield, and our mind, our inner critic, loves it because it can feed off the negativity that it also brings with it. And I think that's why, if we can look back within us and recognize what our true values are, you know, do we actually value who we are? Do you deserve to be successful? Yes or no? You know, and if you're saying no, that's your inner critic talking, and it will tell you why you shouldn't be successful. But if you honestly turn inward and believe in you and think about, you know, what's my value? What's my worth here? I think that's a question to ask yourself, because we all have something to give or something to share or excel at. So I would, you know, ask people to think about, well, what's yours? And once we recognize that and we are happy with that, because that's who I am, I'm living my authentic life, I'm congruent with who I truly am, and my values are aligned with everything I'm making a decision on, you remain in that compassionate existence, because you're doing it for you, ultimately. You're not doing it to compare yourself with others or be the best in the street and have the biggest decor, all of that stuff. We're not doing that because, you know, we're always seeking external validation because of that. Whereas actually what we need to start thinking about is internally validating who we are, because we're amazing, yet we forget that we are. And that's the inner critic playing.
Yeah. You reminded me of a story, and actually I wheeled this one out again from our carousel of content.
Oh, it's back. I love that.
Gave it a respray, brought it out as a fresh story. I've just heard this one. But actually, I'd never made the link between this and self-sabotage before, but actually I think this is quite a cool way to kind of refresh up a story. So you may have heard it before, but it's about this idea of monkeys and bananas. So in ancient times, when they wanted to catch a monkey, well, you could try and run after a monkey, but they'll outrun you and outgun you up that tree instantly. So what the villagers worked out as a way to catch that monkey is poachers would then put a banana, and monkeys love bananas, inside a thin-necked vessel. So let's imagine a jar, and that the neck of the jar is big enough for the monkey to be able to put his closed fist into. But once it then has grabbed that banana and got hold of the banana, it cannot, its hand becomes too big to then be able to extricate itself. So what you then have is a scenario of where this monkey is there trapped. Poachers just come and pick it up and take it away because the monkey can't compute. The fact I'm holding on to this banana is trapping me from freedom. And I think there are some really powerful little builds you can have from that is, am I holding on to some things that are actually sabotaging my ability to be able to develop, grow, breathe, improve, you know, whatever that kind of next step might be? Do I need to let go of some bananas that might actually be holding me back and sabotaging actually that kind of capability that I have? And I know I have on the days where I'm feeling tip top, but could so very quickly then be kind of held back in that jar the next morning if you wake up feeling a little bit different. So I wonder whether for many of us, we've had so much change in the world of work, is shifting some of those, quite frankly, old-fashioned beliefs. Well, this is the type of person I am. This is where I should be now at the stage I'm at. Look at what they're doing. What is it that I need to be doing? And actually, are some of those just some bananas that are holding you in, that if you were to just let go, there's this whole new version of you just waiting around the corner, if only you were able to just shift the direction of where you're looking?
Yeah, and I think it's having that back to your self-belief as well. I think if you've got the self-belief that no matter what, you can find the opportunity in everything. And I know I use your bit of carousel of content on this on one of the workshops we did about Mona and Hope, where you talk about the shoes. And you tell it much more eloquently than I do, Law. And it just resonates as you just said that. So you've got to share the Hope and Mona story.
I'll tell you why I can share it, Debs. It's because I share it so often. That's why. The trick is to make the content sound fresh, isn't it? But it's a gorgeous story I picked up from an organisation I used to do some work from many years ago. And this idea of two salespeople go out to an undeveloped part of the world, and they're shoe salespeople. Mona reports back saying, there's no chance of selling any shoes. No one wears shoes. Hope reports back going, there's loads of opportunity to sell shoes. No one wears shoes. And it's such an amazing little story that catches you of, well, I don't really know what I'm going to do next. I don't really know what I'm going to do next.
Exactly.
Is that either a trap to fall into or a space to grow into? You know, the choice is yours, really, in terms of how you frame it.
And actually, also, the language you use and the tone that you use, one was down, and the other one was lifted up. And I think that's the other trick we need to think about is, our mind listens to what we say. So if we're saying it like, oh my God, it's doom and destruction and that's what you're going to potentially go and get, you know. But if, as you did, you lifted your voice up and go, oh, there's an opportunity. And it's that, your brain is going, ping, I love an opportunity. Yeah. Let me go and find it. So the way we talk to ourselves is also going to help overcome that.
Too right. I've learned so much from that, you know, you and I working alongside each other for so many years, the power of language. Just even the other day in passing, I've been in finance for 10 years. So, you know, I'm not sure what to do next. You've been in finance for 10 years. What do you want to do next?
Exactly.
You
know,
what do you want to do next? Finance is like one of those core things. You can go on to be anything you want to do. Everywhere is going to be influenced by some kind of finance thing.
Yes.
So rather than, I've been doing this for 20 years, you know, I'm not sure what to do next. I've been doing this for 20 years. I'm unsure what to do next. And it's the opening up the space, not closing down, you know, gosh. It's, you know, everyday gift and all that kind of stuff. But I think where that self-sabotage link can then come back in is we are so quick to damn ourselves. And you would not speak to a best friend in the way that you sometimes speak to yourself.
Definitely not.
So come on then. Call to action, Debs. Let's kind of make sure that there's a real kind of tangible action left on this. We've been riffing on the theme of self-sabotage.
Yes.
Could it be a theme of for the hybrid worker in particular, because where many of us are working in much less of a witnessed way. Think of all the meetings you're part of where no one puts their cameras on. How many slices of Victoria sponge cake? Is everyone snaffling, you know, when they're kind of a bit bored in one of the meetings, whatever. So there's a lot of behaviour that we're just not seeing anymore. And I think it's even more upon us as, you know, future world professionals to be even more pristine in how we handle ourselves in our own head. And I love what you're saying about, am I my inner coach or my inner critic?
Yeah.
And so what would your call to action be for someone listening to this thinking, do you know what? I think sometimes I'm my own worst enemy. What would your call to action be?
I think my call to action would be to question why you are holding on to your self-sabotage person. Why are you holding on to it? What is it giving you? How is it helping you? And if it's not, which it won't be, trust me, it definitely won't be, it's how can you start to do some things differently for yourself? So what can you do? It's about plugging yourself back in, as I call it, to connect back with that love and compassion, back to your heart center, to really look within and think about what you can do. So, and also act with that compassion. So what would you do? As you said, what would you tell your best friend if they was feeling the way you were doing? You know, and just replay that back at you. You're your best friend. So what would you do? So I think that's what I would be. Question why you're holding on to it. What's it giving you? And it won't be anything.
Yeah, I love it. And in my share, the secret would be, think of someone in your life who's feeling a bit disheartened at the moment or a bit beleaguered. Get them to listen to this. And maybe you're the person that is able them to access that inner coach, get them getting that self-belief back about what they can do. And remember, not knowing exactly what to do, it doesn't always have to be a gap. It's a space to create. And actually, that ability to be a support buddy for someone, if you think that they're in a self-sabotaging phase at the moment, is life-affirming for you as well. So that would be my share the secret, get them to listen to this and be their best mate in terms of helping them progress. So Debs, what a pleasure as always.
It's
been fantastic talking about self-sabotage. So let's hold each other to account then, shall we?
We'll definitely
have a fantastic week ahead. Can't wait for next week where we're going to be talking about courage and in particular, taking courageous decisions. And I'm so looking forward to hearing our guest that we're going to have, who I know is a dear friend of yours. So that would be brilliant to then have that. So have a fantastic week. Wish you well.
You too, Law. Love you lots.
Love you.
Bye.
We hope you've enjoyed this episode. We'd love to hear from you. Drop us an email on secretsfromacoach@aol.com or follow us on Insta @secretsfromacoach.